Good afternoon and welcome to the Narrow Path radio broadcast. My name is Steve Gregg and we are live from 2 to 3 in the afternoon Pacific Daylight Time. If you happen to be listening at that time, we encourage you to be a part of the program. We've got a bit of a fellowship here on the air with people who call in and discuss matters of importance to them, ask questions about the Bible or about Christianity. If you have such questions or if you have an alternate viewpoint and would like to give equal time or at least balance to some of the comments that have been made here, if you disagree with something that's been said, feel free to call. You're always welcome to do that here. We'll pay for the call. The number is 1-800-438-5090. We have a couple of lines open right now still. If you'd like to call, the number is 1-800-438-5090. Just a couple of quick announcements. One, tonight is Thursday night. I teach each Thursday night in Soquel, California, that's right outside Santa Cruz, a study in the book of Acts. And we have a group of people who are listeners to this program who show up for that. And we've been doing that for several months, about 6 months now, it seems. And if you'd like to join us, you're welcome to do so. This is what the study is for. It's for listeners who want more Bible teaching in their week. And so every Thursday night we do this. We use the facilities of a church that has been generous to let us just hold the meetings there, and that is the Lighthouse Christian Fellowship in Soquel. If you'd like to come to that meeting, if you live close enough to consider that, it's at 7 o'clock every Thursday night, including tonight, and the address is 4525 Soquel Drive in Soquel. That's 4525 Soquel Drive in Soquel, California. Also, tomorrow night we have a meeting that doesn't happen quite so frequently. About once a month we meet in a home for an open Bible discussion, sort of a face-to-face version of this radio program. Again, listeners to the program get together. We have questions and answers and discussion. And it goes on, of course, longer than the hour that we have for this program. And that's because people want it to. It actually is quite engaging, frankly. Most people who come really like it and so come regularly. If you'd like to go to that meeting, if you're in the Santa Cruz area, you can do that. The location, you can get directions to the location by calling this phone number. These are the people who live there. It's Mike and Brenda. And their phone number is area code 831-475-8301. That's 475-8301 if you're in the Santa Cruz area or will be tomorrow night. So tonight we have the study in the book of Acts at 7 o'clock. Tomorrow night we have the open Bible discussion in a home also at 7. If you want contact information or address, you can go to our website. That information is there. It's at thenarrowpath.com, thenarrowpath.com. If you click on the link that says announcements, that'll take you to the information about where you can meet with us. All right, it's time to go to the phones. We'll talk first to Jay, who's calling from Oregon somewhere. Hello, Jay. Welcome to The Narrow Path.
Thank you, Steve. I got a question. There's been a kind of a crisis that came up at my church. I'm in leadership, and we're having a meeting tonight because my pastor, he came out of drugs and stuff about 15, 20 years ago, and this last week he relapsed and he confessed it to us elders today, and we're having an emergency meeting tonight, and the founding pastor is in town, is flown in, and another pastor in the city. And I kind of know, you know, deal with public sin publicly, restoration. So I know we need all the wisdom that we can, and so I thought I'd just ask you, and you feel free to ask any questions, but any kind of insight or that you would have for the situation.
Well, first of all, I'm really sorry for the church and for the pastor in this situation. Obviously, if he relapsed, he's having struggles. Did he relapse into just one instance of using drugs and then confess, or did he fall into a habit for a while?
No, it was a day and a half, 2 day instance.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And how long had it been before since he'd been off drugs? Years?
Years, 15, 20 maybe.
Okay. So do you have an idea why he relapsed at this time after having such a long string of immunity to the addiction?
Well, relatively new pastor, never pastored before, a year and a half, and we're just coming to, just tight financially, stressful situations that we're just getting to him. I think there's just a lot of small things that built up and built up.
Well, do you know what kind of drugs he was using?
I think cocaine, maybe crack.
I see. Well, it's good that he confessed it. That's a very positive thing. I'm going to have to hope that the elders of your church, when they get together, will know how to deal with it. I don't know what to say because I don't know the man. I don't know, what kind of a testimony he's had up to this point and how thoroughly he's repented and so forth. It seems to me that if he fell only for a day or two and then caught himself and repented and brought it to the light, it may not be an ongoing problem. However, it does need to be, if it's the kind of thing that can become public at all, then he should make confession of it to the church. And the church can decide then to what degree they want to trust him in the future. Obviously, they'll probably want him to be much more accountable. And I think most people would say he probably should step down from the pastorate for a while. I would say that just because, it needs to be seen whether he's going to have continuing problems with this. But if he doesn't fall again anytime, in the next months or year or whatever, uh-huh. I would say that this relapse could just be seen as an unfortunate moment of weakness that's not likely to be occurring again. But you never can tell. I mean, a pastor is a human being.
Yeah.
And most pastors, frankly, don't have problems with crack cocaine, but almost all pastors have something they struggle with, something maybe not so scandalous, maybe envy, maybe pride, maybe covetousness, maybe lust, who knows. And if we eliminated every man from ministry who had a struggle that he sometimes succumbed to, I think we'd have very few people in public ministry because men are men. But on the other hand, of course, the Bible indicates that an elder must be blameless. He must be somebody who's not just like any other man in the church, but he should
above
be somebody.
Reproach.
Yeah, he needs to be above reproach. He needs to be somebody that the other members of the church can look to and say, this man's not just telling me how to live for God, he's showing me how to live for God.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I would think he'd realize that too.
Yeah.
It does seem likely that he should, be taken out of the ministry for a while. I'd leave this to the elders of your church to make that decision because, I don't know how far he fell or how quickly he repented. Sounds like he fell only briefly and repented quickly.
Yeah.
Which is a positive thing. So I'm afraid I don't have any specific counsel for them. Obviously, the only thing I would have is the principle. That a man who stands in the pulpit has got to be a man who's got the people's confidence that he is, he's living at least the way that he's telling them to live, and that he can show them how to live the Christian life as well as tell them. That's very important, I think, for a man who's a public minister of any kind. And that doesn't mean he has to be a perfect man.
Mm-hmm.
And so the magnitude or the weight of this particular failure on his part will have to be assessed by in conference with him, by those, who got more of a finger on the pulse of his spiritual life a little better and can make those decisions. In all likelihood, he should step down for a period of time, but I certainly wouldn't consider this disqualifies him from ministry forever. Maybe not even very long term. It just depends very much on, different aspects of what they're going to find out when they talk to him.
Yeah. I know him well. And I was the first guy he called afterwards. It's just, for his sake and his family's sake, but also for the church as a whole and the health of the body, when to make something public or private,
I don't know whether he needs to specifically confess to the church that he used drugs again.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that may be necessary. It may be more necessary for him to simply get up before the church and say, I've had some struggles recently and even some failures that have convinced me that I should not at this time be standing before this congregation as a representative of the Christian leadership. And therefore, my family and I have decided, under the counsel of the elders, to take some time out from the ministry and seek a stronger place in my Christian life before I return to try to lead a flock.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, thanks for being available and speaking what you've spoken, and we can just continue to pray and gather tonight and seek God's will for.
Sure. Yeah, I certainly don't think I could give a pat answer to anything like this. This is much too nuanced, and I think those who are actually in touch with the situation and can talk with him, if they're spiritual men, will probably have a better idea than I would have of what the next step would be.
Yeah, I was just thinking, even if there's more general words of wisdom, we can take everything that we can into the meeting tonight, and so I appreciate that, Steve.
All right, Jay. Well, I'm really sorry. I can tell you're grieving because he's a friend of yours too, as well as your pastor, and it's always sad because we don't. There just aren't that many men of God out there compared to the population, and the devil does target them.
Yeah.
And when one falls. He shouldn't be finished off. You know, it's like when a soldier's wounded, his own troops shouldn't kill him off. They should help to restore him. And, but that restoration, no doubt, should take place without him filling that position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, a lot of the people in our church and even us in leadership have come out of charismatic backgrounds, and we still consider ourselves charismatic church, even though we may not practically, functionally look like it week in and week out. And I was just having a conversation with him and another guy last week about the reality of spiritual warfare and how God, kind of brought back my eyes to that. I can't be ignorant of that. And that was just last week. And I think maybe, eventually down the road, this could be used to help the health of the body and all of us to be aware and not be ignorant.
And did he confess this without getting caught?
Yes, he confessed it. To his wife.
That's a really excellent sign. It shows that he's not a wolf in sheep's clothing. He's not some kind of a perpetrator.
No.
He's been in the battle and he's gotten wounded. There's a difference between a man who's trying to carry on a sinful secret life and also be a minister, on the one hand, and one who falls and immediately brings it to the light and wants to, get fixed. It's clear he's a brother who wants to live right, as opposed to somebody who just wants to fool people and pretend like he's a spiritual man.
Yeah.
So it makes me think well of him.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks.
Oops. We got cut off there. I don't think you're quite finished, but are you there? No, I'm afraid we lost that call. I don't know what happened, Jay, but I think we were probably pretty close to done. I appreciate your call. I hope that gets worked out for the glory of God and such a way that doesn't damage this man or his family too much either, or the church. Well, let's talk next to Jim from Torrington, Connecticut, and we have lines open for you. And by the way, at the end of yesterday's program, a brother named John from the Portland area called, and we just didn't have very much time. He started to develop a point of view, and then our music started playing and we're done, and I really felt like we hadn't heard enough of what he wanted to say. So, John, if you're listening and want to call back, I'd be glad to continue our conversation. But any of you who have a question about the Bible or a point of disagreement with the host, feel free to call 1-800-438-5090. That's 1-800-438-5090. Jim, welcome to The Narrow Path. Good to hear from you again.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
Great.
Good. Do you know who Dr. Greg Boyd is?
Yes.
Have you heard about this new book he just came out with?
Maybe not. What one is it?
The Myth of a Christian Nation.
No, I don't think I've heard of that book. I have had one of his books in the past, and a couple of his other books have been recommended to me, but I haven't had a chance to get them.
When I'm done with it, you want me to send it to you?
I'd be glad to have it.
It's very interesting, because back in the... This is based on a sermon series he did, and plus other stuff, The Cross and the Sword. back in 2004, like many of the elders and people in his church wanted him to get involved in the political system, you know, doing the voter guides and things like that.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he refused to do it. And then he proceeded to do this series called The Cross and the Sword. And I think something like up to a third of his congregation left.
Oh, he must have been saying something right.
Yeah, I know. And they were very upset because he would not take a political stand in, you know, the evangelical right, political right. And I'm only two chapters into this book, but it's very, very interesting. He actually believes that our alliance with these political movements is destroying the gospel and destroying our mission.
Well, I've been saying the same thing for many years. I really would like to see what he has to say. He's a very smart man and a good writer.
Yes.
He holds some theological positions I don't hold, but I respect him.
Yeah, he's an open theist, but, you know.
I know.
That's, you know, besides that, I so far, I'm very impressed by what he's saying. It's not, you know, real deep or hard to read. It's an easy read, but you know, I mean, he makes some really good points, you know, and I've been wondering about that myself. Is your address? Go ahead.
The address still P.O. Box 3633,
yeah.
Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I get my personal mail there as well as the ministry mail. But what I was going to say is, I don't speak about politics much here. And when people bring it up, I'm not very political, as you probably know from listening over the years.
Right.
I do think that by taking an overtly political stand, the church has distanced itself from its audience that it would normally be called to reach for the gospel.
Right.
Because, frankly, if we believe, for example, let us say as conservative Christians, if that's what we are,
right.
if we believe that social conservatism is more moral and more biblically correct, well, then what that would mean is that the people who are socially liberals are the people that really need to be reached with the truth of God. However, by becoming political conservatives,
right.
We simply define ourselves as a special interest group in competition with the people we should be wanting to reach, and that doesn't make us winsome to them. That doesn't make them see us as a prophetic voice for God.
Right.
It makes them see us as a competing special interest in the political arena, which
right.
is not what Jesus or the apostles ever postured themselves as.
He brings up that point really well about Christ and the political system, his time and stuff. You know, I had mentioned this before, and I think it rings true. Years ago, I had talked to a gay man online, you know, and you know, his only really interaction with Christians was in a political fight he was in, you know.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Right. You know, I mean, never just them talking to him about the gospel. I mean, they told him he was a sinner, you know, basically, and you know, he's going to hell. But you know, basically, it was in political fights, and you know, and he said, you know, I mean, he goes, I can never go into a Christian church, you know. Now, you know, what he's doing is sin and wrong, but his distaste for Christians wasn't so much the gospel message as it was their political wrangling, and you know, and so you know, that always stuck with me what he said, you know.
You know, back in the 70s. It was not difficult to witness to homosexual people or any other kind of people.
Right.
Because it was, I think, in the 80s primarily, if I remember correctly.
Yes, it was.
That the moral majority arose and stuff. And then in the 90s, there were a lot of Christian-sponsored political measures offered to limit the rights of, when I say limit the rights, to avoid giving special rights.
Right.
To the homosexual community, which, by the way, in principle, I agree that the homosexual community probably shouldn't have any special rights. They're not any more special than you or me. Why should they have rights I don't have?
Right.
But the point is, that's not my issue. That's not the gospel's concern. The gospel's concern is not whether these people, who it may be, are living in sin, whether the government gives them tax breaks or not. That's not what the gospel's concerned itself with.
Right.
What the gospel's concerned with is whether these people who are living in sin can see the love of Jesus in the people of God and find and have a conviction in their hearts that if they need God, this is the place to look for him.
Yeah, well,
and by being political about this, I think the church has simply passed along the message to the homosexual community: we're not on your side.
Right.
We're your enemies. We're your enemies. And so if homosexuals want to change or want to get right with God, they'll never consider the evangelical community to be the place to look.
No, because, you know, and another thing, too, I mean, what Greg Boyd had made the point that I've been reading so far is that, you know, I mean, it's become, Steve, in evangelical circles, orthodoxy. Your political views are they have to be orthodox, or you're not. That's what happened to him. His political views are not orthodox. He's just distancing himself from the whole political arena, and he feels very strongly about this. And when he's done that, he's not orthodox anymore. I mean, he's not even some of the things that were said to him by his own congregation, that they don't believe he's a Christian anymore. You know?
Well, yeah, that's too bad. But you know, that's just because the majority of churchgoers are not Christians themselves, or if they are, they're not even sure what it is that makes them Christians. They think they're Christians because they hold this view or that view. That some of them may actually be Christians, but very confused about what makes them a Christian.
Right.
But I think an awful lot of churchgoers aren't anything like what the Bible calls Christians anyway. And they are in the church because they are conservative, or because they have some other values that they have in common with the conservative evangelical movement.
Right.
But they don't understand the kingdom of God. I think Greg Boyd does, and I appreciate the fact, you know, that he lost a third of his congregation. I'm sorry that he lost his congregation, part of it, because he had a very large one there in the Minneapolis area. But at the same time, it's kind of a good sign.
Right.
I mean, I hate to say it, with the mood of the evangelical church today, if a preacher begins to preach his convictions and loses a third of his congregation, that's a real good sign. Because frankly, I think most churches have more than a third of their congregation that shouldn't be there anyway.
Right.
Because they're not Christians.
Yeah, I know. I belong to a little church, congregational church. We're independent. We broke away from the UCC. And, you know, I mean, I love my pastor. I think he's a great guy. But a lot of things is about, well, look how many people we got here. You know, he's getting more and more people. But it's like, so what? You know, it's like, I don't know. It's the numbers game. And I see it already. He's an older fellow who just got in, just became a pastor. And it's a numbers game for him, you know.
Well, you got to remember that whether a pastor is a good pastor or not, whether he's a good man or not such a good man, he's under pressure to see himself in the role of a CEO of a corporation called a church. And when you begin to think of a church as a corporation and the pastor is the CEO, suddenly the models of corporate America and what CEOs do and so forth, and how their success is measured and so forth, become ingrained in the groupthink of the church, so that a denomination looks at a pastor's church and determines if he's a successful pastor by whether the church is getting bigger,
right?
Whether they're having to add to their buildings, mm-hmm. whether they've got more people coming in, whether they've basically all the measures of success that you see in an earthly corporation.
That's exactly right. And you know what the big thing now is a big project. He wants to add on, he wants to build a school, like $200,000-$300,000 school addition to this, you know. It's like, you know, we haven't even spent money on Bible tracts to send them out to anything.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
Well, Jim, I want to say this. Although I'm into homeschooling more than into Christian schooling, I believe that some churches would perhaps provide a good service to the community if they had a school. But I wouldn't suggest that they overextend themselves. So if it's going to cost $200,000 or $300,000 to build on, I think they should wait till they have that money on hand and then build. If that's the direction they feel God's leading them to go.
Yeah, but you know, I think a part of that building, Steve, is to attract more people to. You know, and I think maybe attracted for the wrong reasons.
Could be, but here's the thing. I'm not against attracting more people if what you're attracting them to is truly the gospel.
Right.
You know, I mean, in a sense, the Sunday school movement was started, I think, back in the 1800s or the 1700s by someone who wanted to reach out to the unsaved and unchurched children of their neighborhood. And so they started Sunday school programs, and they actually got a lot of kids from unchurched homes to come, and I'm sure to find the Lord. They actually evangelized them.
Right.
And if you have a school, a Christian school, it may become a great tool of evangelism for kids from non-Christian homes, or maybe even kids from Christian homes who aren't saved themselves and would be corrupted in a public school. I'm not against it. I'm not against it if that's how God leads a church to go. I don't think every church needs to start a school, but I would see it as a legitimate thing for some churches to do. But and of course they would hope that the kids who come to school would maybe eventually come to the church too. But as long as the preaching is uncompromised, there's no sin in wanting the church to have more people in it. I mean,
what I'm finding, Steve, though, is that sermons are getting more bland, more accessible to everybody and everything. You know, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm being overcritical, but
I could see that as a realistic trend in many churches. So I'm sorry to hear that about yours. I don't know if you're overcritical about your church or not, but I know that a lot of pastors are just looking to get a bigger church because it is a measure of their success, and in some cases, it's a stepping stone into a higher position in their denomination or something. You know,
we'll wonder about when he's going to, you know, suddenly fall the way to a bigger church.
Sure,
you know?
the man who can go into a small church and build it into a big church is on the short list of guys to be promoted to a more advantageous area, to a better church, to a better paycheck, and so forth. And that's what motivates a lot of these guys. Maybe it may not be their top motivation, or it may not even be their conscious motivation. You know, in their own minds, maybe they think they're serving God, but it's hard when you're part of a system that affirms you if you can get more people to come to your church. It's hard not to fall into some kind of pressure to want that, and to want it in some cases enough to compromise your message to achieve it.
Yeah, I know. So, Steve, when I finish that book, it should be about a week or so. I'll send it out there. I hope you get a chance. You said your eyesight's going bad.
Well, it's only going bad like all people's eyesight goes bad at my age.
Yeah, I've got to wear glasses, too.
Yeah, I'm wearing reading glasses now and stuff. But, I mean, I'm not going blind as far as I can tell.
I was going to get you the book before you went blind.
Yeah, that's good, too.
No,
I appreciate it, Jim.
I know you got a lot on your table, but I hope you get a chance to read it and maybe critique it on the show or speak about it.
Okay, if I get a chance, I will. I'll certainly try to read it.
Okay.
God bless you, man.
Thank you, Steve.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. All right, you're listening to the Narrow Path radio broadcast. My name is Steve Gregg, and we've got one line open for you at 1-800-438-5090. Judy from Paso Robles, thanks for waiting. It's good to have you on the program.
Thank you for having your program on the air. When I was listening to previous callers, are you there?
Yeah. Yes, I'm there. Uh-huh.
I appreciated your truthful and wisdom-based answer, and it was full of grace. I wanted to add one other thing to it that I've observed in the Christian recovery I've been involved in the last 15 years.
Okay.
Pastors so often are isolated, and, you know, Lord calls us to live in community. And yet pastors often don't have that community as leaders of a church where they can tell their honest and real story and have support.
Yeah.
So I would just suggest, if it was something they were open to, that I've been involved with a ministry called Celebrate Recovery. I'm not sure if you've heard of that at all. It's worldwide at this point.
I've heard of it.
Yeah, and I just didn't hear that in your answer, and I didn't know if that was available or something that they'd look into, but my heart just broke for his pastor because I.
You're talking about the past. You're talking about the pastor who fell into drug use again.
Yes, I am. Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
The previous one. So anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there. And if Jim, if you have contact with that first caller that you had a chance to open that idea to him. And in the meantime, I'll be praying for his pastor and his whole congregation tonight.
Thanks, Judy.
You're welcome. Thank you for being on the air.
All right. Bye-bye now.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You know, I would be surprised if the people in his church had not heard of Celebrate Recovery, and I'm sure that that's something that would be one of the things on the table for them to consider if this is an ongoing problem. I think if the man has been drug-free for 15 or 20 years and he fell one day and then repented and came and confessed it and stopped, I'm not sure that he's an addict or has a life-dominating problem that needs a full program like that for. I would think that he needs some accountability, and he needs some time off of public ministry, and he needs to get strong in the Lord. Perhaps recovery might help in that way. But I really believe that getting strong in the Lord can be done without programs. All the people, you know, until about a century ago, had to overcome sin in their life without the kind of programs we have now, and they did so simply by trusting God and applying His Word and walking in the Spirit. I realize that our modern Christian church doesn't know very much about the Word of God because they're not preaching the Word of God as much as they used to, so we've got a highly biblically illiterate population of Christians right now, much more so than we did 30 years ago. And in addition to that, we have very few Christians who know very much about what it means to walk in the Spirit and not fulfill the lust of the flesh. But those are things that aren't related to programs. Those are things that are related to a relationship with God. And I'm just afraid that an awful lot of people who are called Christians today have settled for a much watered-down version of the dynamic, supernatural, empowered Christian life that is normative and that is available. But I think what this man needs most of all is to get his life with God, close. When you walk close with God, if you walk in the Spirit, you will not fulfill the lust of the flesh. And then, the kinds of things that recovery addresses cease to be a problem when you walk in the Spirit. But if a person doesn't know how to walk in the Spirit, doesn't do it, then sometimes some other programs may help. But hopefully he'll take the biblical course. Let's talk to Leo from Salinas, California. Hello, Leo. Welcome to The Narrow Path.
Hello, Steve. So, as you know, most people are ignorant of what leprosy is all about. They think it's nothing more but a severe, incurable skin rash. Well, people in the old days suffered these afflictions. They were missing toes, limbs, fingers, and lips, noses, and ears, and disfigurement. Now, when in the Bible, Jesus cured many of them and made them whole. Can we assume that these leopards who were missing these parts of their body, their fingers grew back, their toes grew back, their feet grew back, and their lips grew back, and the ears came back, when it's all it does mention that lepers were made whole?
So did Jesus regenerate whole limbs and things like
that?
Well, first of all, we can't assume it for sure because we don't know how advanced the stages of leprosy were and whether the particular lepers in question had lost limbs and fingers and so forth. But I do think we could assume that to whatever degree leprosy had changed them and disabled them, that Christ did restore them to wholeness. So, yeah, I would say this. If any of the lepers that Jesus healed had lost fingers or ears or whatever from leprosy, I believe that those things would have been restored to them. It's not a problem for Jesus to restore an ear. We know that he healed an ear with a touch that had been cut off with a sword. If leprosy had taken an ear or a nose or a lip, it would be no problem for Jesus to restore it. But when you say, is it safe to assume that Jesus did that kind of thing? I would say it would only be safe to assume that if we are also assuming that all of the lepers that he cured had such advanced stages of leprosy, which some might have, but we don't know. We're only told that they were lepers. We're not told how far gone they were, you know?
Oh. Well, I like to believe in the other statement in which they were made whole completely.
Well, that's exactly what I said. Excuse me, I just said that.
Yeah.
I said they were made whole completely. The question is, they were made whole from what condition?
Right.
We don't know how far their condition had gone. So all I'm saying is, we're ignorant. We don't know.
Right. So therefore, well, I guess the clear answer is that we should assume that he did, that the person was made completely whole as a normal.
Absolutely. Yeah. Of course he made them completely whole. Again, the question is whether that involved regenerating limbs or not.
Right.
Or regenerating
appendages. That's the whole thing. I mean,
yeah.
You know, the fingers grew back, the tips were missing, came back as if it never, never was a disease. So.
Right. That's exactly right. If they were gone,
yeah,
they were restored.
They were gone.
Yeah.
Well, you answered
okay.
My question. Thank you very much, Steve.
All right, Leo. Thanks for your call.
Sure, bye.
Bye-bye now. Let's talk to Chris from San Jose next. Hello, Chris. Welcome to The Narrow Path.
Hi, Steve. I want you to know that I've been reading my Bible, and I'm learning a lot, listening to you for an hour on my way home from Salinas to San Jose.
So praise God.
My question today is, I was
married when I was 16 years old, and I married a man that forced himself on me, and I became pregnant, and my mother believed in the old way, and, you know, once a man takes you, that's it. And he was very abusive, so I was divorced by the time I was 19. And 11 years ago, I was engaged to a man, and he got into some trouble, and we were engaged while he was in the county jail. And I was pretty naive about his sentence and a prison term and all. And he got a 25-year-to-life sentence, a 3-strike sentence. And before that happened, we decided to marry. And you were talking about divorce yesterday. And so I became a Christian, you know, recently. And this is something, and I say recently, I feel young in it. It's been a few years. But he uses that against me to hold me. I mean, we've had a lot of problems. He's continued to get in trouble while he's been in prison. With this kind of a sentence, there are no any kind of family visits or anything like that. And I just feel like I'm buried alive. And
yeah,
I just want to get out of it. And I want to know if you can tell me if this pure. I want your opinion. So I want to know if it's
right.
Pure selfishness on my part. Can I? I
mean, so Chris, let me ask you this.
I'm going to listen off the air because I know I'm going in and out.
Okay, but before you go, you're not married to this man? You're simply engaged to him?
No, I married him. I married him in the county jail before he got his sentence.
I see.
And I have been a faithful and a good, devoted wife to him. But he's continued, as I said, to get into trouble, and he's very, very demanding. I've moved to every city that he's been transferred throughout California, and I want to do the right thing as a Christian woman, and he knows that. He knows that, and that's why I've tried to hang on, and I've prayed so much about it, and I just don't know if I'm hearing right, you know, because I feel that this last year we've had a lot of things that have kept us from visiting. And I was always weak about our separation, and I felt that the Lord was just preparing me for the great breakup, you know, because before I would fall apart, and I gained so much strength, you know, and being on my own and reading and learning. I mean, he didn't want me going to the church that I was going to, and I felt like it was my home, you know, when I finally did find this church. And
Is he a man who professes to be a Christian himself?
No, he professed to be one before and told me that. He told me that because he knew that's what I was looking to you know, to live my life.
Right, but he doesn't claim to be a Christian now.
No, he says he's a Catholic. He doesn't call himself a Christian, but, you know, I know Catholics are Christian too, but that's what he says.
What?
Because he does believe in God and he does believe in Jesus, but he just doesn't believe the same things that I believe.
Okay, I know you want to get off, but let me ask you this. You say he keeps getting in trouble in jail. What kinds of things is he doing in there? Is he committing crimes in jail?
No, what he's been doing is he's been using drugs. And because I was not really, you know, I didn't know. I know everybody's told me, oh, I had to have known, but I didn't know. I really didn't know what he was doing. And then he's got what they call 115s over the years, and I've always just tried to stand by him, you know, and it's only been when they've taken our business away that I found out about what was going on with him, and even then I only found out what he told me. And then in December he tried to commit suicide because he said I told him that I was very unhappy, and he's been insisting on me taking responsibility for causing that. And I refuse to, because I can't be responsible for what somebody else does. And the thing is that when he's gotten in trouble, if you know anything about the prison system, is that when he gets into trouble like that, it's almost a reflection of me, because it's like they think, well, how does he get it? Is his wife bringing it to him?
Yeah.
You know? And I've told him before so many times, the one thing I have is, you know, my honor and, you know, my dignity, and
he steals it from me when this happens, and I have to visit him behind glass. We've been behind glass for 9 months because of him getting in trouble. And
okay, he was sentenced to 25 years. How long has he been in?
He's been in 10 and a half years now.
And has his sentence been extended because of his bad behavior? Is he out
no.
in 15 or?
No, they consider him a lifer, so they don't do anything. When it's drug related, unless he was selling something, but he's in trouble for using. And he
yeah.
and as far as I knew, he never used before. But then again, there's a lot of things I'm learning about him that I didn't know before. So,
yeah, okay, this is, I'm afraid, the reason I ask as many questions is because I'm trying to really get a handle on what the moral issues are involved here. You see, he's not a Christian and you are, okay? Now, Paul gives instructions to believers who are married to unbelievers, and he tells them that as long as the unbeliever is content to dwell with the believer, that is to live with them, then the believer should not leave. But if the unbeliever departs, then the believer is not under bondage. And I'm trying to decide in this case, and I don't know if I know, I don't know if I have the mind of God, I may not, exactly how that would apply to this case. He's not dwelling with you. Presumably, if he was not in prison, he would want to live with you, in which case you wouldn't have grounds for divorce. But on the other hand, if he keeps getting in trouble so that it, you know, fairly guarantees he's never going to come home, then one could argue that his behavior is saying, I'm not planning to live with you. And so I'm afraid I don't know very much. I'd have to contemplate this. I don't want to give a pat answer because you have a complex situation. My thought is it's possible that his situation is such that he'd be like a believer who's departed. He's departed by breaking laws and doing things that would take him out of your life against your will. But I don't want to give permission to do something that would not be of God at this point. So
he's never gonna let me go. He'll never
yeah.
let me go. He's never gonna confess. He's never gonna, you know, that's never gonna happen. So what I guess I'm hearing is that
well,
this is how
okay.
my life is gonna be.
Well, it's possible that it will be. I'm not 100% sure. I'll tell you this. In this format, where I only have a few minutes to try to hear your situation and such, I'm not sure I could give you an answer that I would be positive about the correctness of. Do you have a pastor or a group of spiritual people that you that know you and that you answer to?
Yes, I do.
Have you gone to them and asked their counsel?
I belong to a very big church, and I don't know. I mean, as far as the church and the service and the pastor, it's an excellent place. But as far as
yeah.
one-on-one personal thing, that's another whole other story because it's so big. But
I'll tell you something, Chris. I don't want to leave you hanging. At the same time, I don't feel the confidence. I don't feel like I know enough to really give an answer of peace at this point. And what I'd like to do is have time to contemplate it and pray about it, but I still don't know if I know enough about it. But I, at the same time, I don't want to just blow you off and say sorry. I don't know the answer. Next caller, please. When I realize that this is your whole life that's in the balances here, and so I don't want to leave you hanging. But I also don't want to give you a quick answer that's not based on adequate knowledge of what the mind of God is. So if you'd give me some time to think about it, maybe you could, if you wanted to email me or something like that, and give me more information. Or I wish I could talk to him. Where is he in prison? Is he in Soledad?
He's in Mule Creek State Prison.
Okay. Well, you know, maybe I could, if you wanted to email me about this, because I'd like to have some contact with him also before I would give some kind of counsel to you.
Okay, I'll do that. Thank you. I appreciate you.
I wish I could just give you some sage answer, but I'm just not that brilliant.
Okay, thank you.
I'll try to help, though.
Okay, thank you. Okay, bye.
God bless you, Chris. I hope that everyone out there who's listening will be praying for Chris's situation. You can imagine how trapped she feels. And maybe you just feel like the answer's obvious, divorce the bum. I take marriage vows a little more seriously than that. I do believe there's a possibility that she may have grounds to get out of there, but it's not, to my mind, as clear-cut as it would be in the minds of some people. And some people rush to give counsel of divorce far more quickly than I would ever do. So I need to consider that. And I'm sure that many of you, your heart breaks for her as you hear her tell her story, and hopefully you remember to pray for her. Some of you guys who keep a prayer list, I hope that when you listen to this program, you add people who call in to your prayer list, because some people call in and there's very little I can do by giving them a brief answer here on the air. But if hundreds or thousands of people start praying for their situation, it may be far more valuable as a result of them being on here than anything I can say to them. Let's talk to Mike, who's calling from Jefferson, Oregon. Hello, Mike. Welcome to the Narrow Path.
Hey, Steve. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks.
Hey, I had a question. You talked about walking in the Spirit earlier, and
yep.
I'm getting ready to get involved in a children's ministry, and I want to make sure that I know if I do anything, I know if I just head into it and I start doing it, I mean, and I'm not walking in the Spirit, then things can get pretty messed up. So.
Is your life like, are you totally surrendered to Jesus Christ in your life generally?
I don't think so.
I don't mean are you a perfect person, because obviously none of us could say that we're perfect people. I guess what I want to know is, in your life, in your Christian life, is Jesus the defining issue in who you are? Or is he sort of a peripheral issue? You kind of believe in him, and he's kind of important, and you go to church and do things like that. But really, in your day by day life, other things seem to predominate more.
He's on my mind a lot throughout the day, and throughout. I mean, when I make decisions,
yeah.
I hope that I'm doing what it is that he wants me to do, and.
Well, I guess the real question is it the desire of your heart to please God all the time and to do what's His will?
Yes, sure it is.
Okay, and that may be true. That may be true even if there's a lot of imperfection.
Not that I necessarily do it all the time, but it is.
I understand.
It is my desire to do that.
I understand. See, I believe that this, the definition of what I'm talking about is far more seen in where your heart's desires are than in your performance, okay? Because a person is a true Christian if they have decided that they want to obey Jesus in everything, even though they may be weak and sometimes forgetful or neglectful, and they don't do the right thing every time, but they want to, and as soon as they realize they haven't done it, it's in their heart to repent and to want to do better. If that's where you're at, then your desire is to please the Lord, and that's what I'm talking about, being wholly committed to the Lord.
I think that in all honesty, I backslide, and then I want to come back, and I kind of get frustrated because I don't know exactly what direction I should be heading in.
Are there people in your life that are a godly influence in your life that you see on a regular basis?
Not necessarily, no.
Uh-huh. And is that because you don't know any, or is that because you're attracted to certain other people who just have a different kind of influence on you?
I'm kind of a loner when it comes to that. I mean,
I see.
I have a daughter that I'm raising up, and so I mean. Just kind of a little history, and I've talked to you about in the past, but I have a daughter
uh-huh.
and a mom, and so, I mean, I'm right now, basically, I'm focusing on the family.
What do you do in terms of fellowship? Do you have a church? Do you have some Christian friends? Do you have no fellowship?
I have a church that I go to. I don't really have a whole lot of fellowship. I mean, the most fellowship that I really have is with the guys at my work.
I see.
Talking
and are them. Any are any of them Christian?
They claim to be, yes.
Okay.
Probably, I believe so.
Have you ever suggested to them that you get together at lunchtime to read the Bible together or something like that? Would they scoff at that, or would that be something they'd say, yeah, we ought to do more of that?
They I know they probably wouldn't sit down and want to do that. I mean, it would be. I don't think they would make the time to do that. I don't think that would be the top thing on their list.
Yeah, so they don't really have a heart after God. They just call themselves Christians, apparently, it would appear. Okay, well, I'm not sure what to say except that you need to really, you need to keep Christ central in your heart, and that's a very hard thing to do. It's not impossible, but it's hard to do if the people around you are different than that. I mean, if you don't have friends at all who are pressing on to know God and totally committed to Him, you can stand alone. Daniel did in Babylon. You know, Daniel stayed uncompromised in Babylon, though he didn't have much fellowship. But it's hard. And most people don't do it very well. And so that's why I'm thinking you really need to find someone. It might be just you might want to go to the pastor of your church, even if he doesn't know you well. I don't know if he does or not. And just say, listen, I'm looking for some sold out Christian to talk to a couple times a week on the phone or to have breakfast with or lunch with or something, because I need more encouragement in my life to keep my thoughts on Jesus Christ. And and the pastor, he may be such a person. He may be looking for someone to fellowship with. He may want to meet with you, or he may know someone who does. And if he doesn't know anyone who does, and he's not such a person, I'd look for another pastor and ask them. Because you need to search after God like you would search for hid treasures. You know, you've got to make it the priority of your life, because we're living in dangerous times, man. Spiritually, there's going to be a lot of people. Many people have fallen away, and many people will who have not yet, because they're not making Christ the central priority in their life. And I just can't urge you strong enough to find someone who will encourage you that way. And if you can't find someone, or until you do, then just certainly discipline your life to seek God, you know, in prayer and in the study and meditation on the Scriptures. I mean, if you can get, for example, you know, the Bible on CD, someone reading the Bible, and whenever you're driving in your car, just be playing it and listening to it instead of listening to talk radio or music or something else. And think about it. It will make a difference. I guarantee you it'll make a difference. It may not be all you need. I think you need fellowship too. But it could be that in a dry and thirsty land where no water is and no fellowship is, you can still be nourished from the Word. You know, it says in Psalm 1 that the person who meditates day and night on the Word of God will be like a tree planted by rivers of water who brings forth fruit in his season, and his leaf doesn't wither, and everything he does shall prosper. So that's one thing you can begin to do, is meditate day and night on the Scripture. Even if you just read, for example, a psalm or a chapter out of the Gospels every morning before you go to work, and make a disciplined effort to think about that during the day.
Is that an example of walking? I never run out of time, but is that an example of walking in the Spirit, or?
That's part of it. That's part of it. Walking in the Spirit is the whole complex of yielding to God in every way. But I think meditating on the Word of God is a key factor, and the first and most accessible factor to most of us, if we would just do it. Mike, I'd like to talk to you more, as you know, but we're out of time. You can certainly call tomorrow, and we can talk about some more.
Okay, thanks, Steve. God bless.
God bless you, brother. And my apologies to Tyson calling from Round Rock, Texas. We won't be able to get to your call today. I wish we could. Maybe tomorrow we can talk to you. You've been listening to the Narrow Path radio broadcast. This is a daily program from 2 to 3 in the afternoon, Pacific Daylight Time, both on radio and Internet. We pay for the radio time by people sending donations to help us pay those bills. If you'd like to write to us, the address is The Narrow Path, P.O. Box 3633, Santa Cruz, California, 95063. That address can also be found at our website, which is thenarrowpath.com. Those of you in the Santa Cruz area, remember we have a meeting tonight in SoCal and tomorrow night in Santa Cruz. You can find those also at the website, thenarrowpath.com. Be glad to see some of you tonight and tomorrow. God bless you. Until tomorrow, this is Steve Gregg. Tune in again tomorrow. We'll continue our discussion.